doesn't only come from the right or from the SDP. Frank Field, the left-wing Labour MP for Birkenhead, has grave doubts about militants' long-term faith in parliamentary democracy.
This is the rub. Is Millicent using democracy as a tactic, or do they believe it? Now, I believe it, and that's why one suffers defeat. Someone comes back and tries to fight from a basis of defeat to convince people. If, for example, one had Millicent winning the Labour Party, how many of us would survive in it much longer? I mean, leaving apart the fact that some would leave, would we not actually face expulsions very quickly, just as at University College, the various Trotskyite factions dub the Tribunite students there as closet SDPers who should be drummed out of the party because the Trotskyites are in the majority. That's what's waiting for us. That's what the British voter smells and doesn't like it.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Likes of Us podcast with me, your host Neil Bradley, dedicated to working class life, art, politics and culture. Okay, you find me on this very cold Friday morning in Piccadilly Circus. I've took a little trip on a train up to London and I'm taking a trip to my church, the church of Levi Strauss & Co. Have a load up before my next holiday, even though no doubt when I get on the next holiday I'll be going to Levi Strauss & Co. and loading up some more. That's why the cases are always so heavy. So yeah, grim old day today, but I've always sort of liked this sort of time in the morning in the West End. It's the only time I really come. I hate coming over here in the evenings when all of the tourists are in town and all of the up from London, you know, from the suburbs, are coming up to the theatre and other places, all acting like tourists themselves. I always think you get a much better view and idea of the city in the mornings when all the deliveries are being made and all the real people are out and about, peppered in amongst all of the people walking around with maps and taking selfies. So a busy old this week at work, certainly plenty of really good classes and a nice choir session yesterday in work with the Goldsmiths staff choir, even though I weren't too keen on the song we had to sing, Scissor Sisters, I Don't Want to Dance. I'd never heard of it. Written by Elton John, apparently, as a sort of homage to the Bee Gees. So that went down well with my deep voice, especially when I was asked to pitch it at the highest note I could maintain. On top of that, I was the only bass there, so when it came to my bits, I had to sing on my own, which is always a little bit daunting. Now tomorrow, as I mentioned on last week's episode, I have a sort of concert of sorts in a church in Bexley Heath with my Greenwich Community Choir, where we're performing five songs. It'll be the first time I've sort of performed with them, so I'm looking forward to that. Not quite sure what to expect, but hopefully it will be joyous, as I keep mentioning. And I think I said last week, you know, maybe a bit of a departure for me, easing into the third act of my life. I'm not sure that long ago I would have been brave enough to join a choir or even had any desire to join a choir. But things change. As I keep saying, if you get an opportunity to do something, you should grab it with both hands. And, you know, more importantly, don't worry about what other people think, because it's all about you, ultimately. It's not about them. And again, ultimately, they're the naysayers, not you. And I've no doubt, whatever it is you'll choose, you'll get something from it. Now, yesterday when I was going to work, I went up on the station, there was a fellow I know sitting on the station. I said, oh, are you off to work? And he said, no, I'm just going for a ride on a train. I said, all right, okay. I said, look, you want to be careful because you'll start taking down the numbers next. And he laughed and I waved him on his way. And then he sent me a message later on in the day saying that he'd actually taken voluntary redundancy a couple of weeks before. And for a few weeks at least, he was enjoying his freedom, even though, as he explained to me, the redundancy wouldn't be enough to see him through to retirement, and he'd probably have to get another job part-time maybe. So I've just taken a diversion off Regent Street and I've gone into Heddon Street, and obviously the scene of where David Bowie's album cover was shot, Ziggy Stardust, and of course now lots of the bars and restaurants have changed their name to fit in with that. So I'm just coming past a sign on a wall and it says this marks the location of the cover photograph for the iconic David Bowie album Ziggy Stardust, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, 1972. Where did the time go? That's what I want to know. And where did Bowie go? We all want to know that one. So just coming out the other end, and of course to my left is the famous telephone box. On the back cover you can see him inside that telephone box. So I'm just making my way back out of Heddon Street now, back onto Regent Street, and then going up to Levi's and indulge in some denim for an hour or so, spend all my pocket money which I've been saving up. So if anything happens in the meantime, I'll give you more, but in the meantime I'll speak to you in a while. Cheers. Tuesday evening and you just find me on a walk back from the station, coming back from Goldsmiths, where this afternoon I had a sort of like tea and coffee drop-in event with the wellbeing department, and I was just really there to meet people and talk about the work we do at Open Book at Goldsmiths. And people just come in, have a cup of tea, have a cup of coffee, sit down and we have a chat, and they hear a little bit about what we do, and it gets them thinking, hopefully, about what they might be able to do for us in the future in terms of either like volunteering or offering up resources from their respective departments, whether it's like academic or admin departments, to help us on our way, because you know we're modestly resourced and we need every bit of help we can get often. So yeah, it was interesting enough. I met a nice woman from the careers department who was having a think about how the careers department could work for some of our more mature students who are not these, you know, like these bright-eyed 21-year-olds fresh out of university looking to get a graduate job. And of course, you know, the thing with lots of our students, they've often gone to job centres where they've been offered minimum wage jobs with no prospect and no real desire to do the jobs on offer. As I always found every time I went to the job centre when I was younger. So we'll see what comes from that. Now, as I was saying in the previous section, on Saturday I was performing in a concert with my local community choir, and it was a triumph, I have to say. It was a great night, about 200 people in the audience in a big old church in Bexley Heath. Now, what struck me when I parked the car up and sort of was making my way to the church is how grubby it all become, Bexley Heath. And again, like all these places, sort of unrecognisable from the place I've known in the past, even though I don't go there too often. But yet inside, it was really nice, you know, a lot of proper community event. Everyone there because they wanted to be there. Those singing, those in the audience. And it was a sort of joyous event. Five different choirs performing. Two like women's choirs, a primary school choir, five men who had only been going for 8 weeks who sang three songs, which were really good. And then like our big choir, we sang five songs or four songs, and then all of the choirs got together and sang one song to bring it all to a conclusion. And it was really great. Now what I noticed was that one of the choirs on offer was from Bexley Grammar School. There was all these like young boys and young girls, teenagers, and they were really nice. But it sort of struck me how when I was at school, I never saw a choir, let alone ever joined one, because the reality was that wasn't the sort of thing we did. And even if you had a desire to do that, peer pressure would be such that you wouldn't bother for fear of getting your head kicked in, you know. As I said in previous podcasts, you know, you get beaten up for listening to David Bowie records. So if you said you wanted to be a painter and decorator, they'd thought you was being pretentious. So, yeah, and that, it did struck me why we're like that, you know, because we are our own worst enemies often, the working classes. We're always sort of taking the piss and being defensive about stuff that usually can make you happy. You know, and I think that's like a flaw in our collective character for some bizarre reason. We're always suspicious of anything and anyone that's different. And I'm just not quite sure why that is and why it should be so and why it's always been so. So I'm fortunate now that I'm at an age that I've been sort of liberated. I had my Renaissance year that you've heard about on previous podcasts, when I threw myself into everything creative and discovered it was like the first time, I think, in my life that I was truly felt sort of happy, you know, and long may that continue. But as I'm always saying to people, like, there's stuff out there and you have to go looking for it. They're not going to come knock on your door and drag you screaming to an event. You have to put yourself out sometimes. You have to put your head above the parapet and just go for it and not worry about what other people think. So I went back to the choir last night and we started working on new songs immediately, and it was great. Let's say, really joyous. And I'm not embarrassed to say that. And I come home full of beans, looking forward to next week with a bit of a spring in my step. And again, long may that continue. So I've just reached home now. I've reached my dad's home. So I'm just going to go in and have a cup of tea with him. And I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers. Okay, you find me on a Wednesday evening, making my way up to the Long Pond for a pint of strong ale with all the over 70s, where everyone will be calling me Brad. I hope you enjoyed that last little song from the rehearsal that took place on Saturday prior to our concert on Saturday night. As I keep saying, joyous. Now, the clip I played at the beginning of this episode was the voice of Frank Field MP, Labour MP for Birkenhead for many, many years, talking about the militant tendency. Now, if you'd been listening from the beginning, when I first started doing these podcasts, I talked about going up to the TUC conference in the midst of the miners' strike and encountering Derek Hatton, who is the deputy leader of Liverpool City Council, who was part of the militant tendency, and they sort of deliberately bankrupted the city as a challenge to the Thatcher government. Now, we all have our views on the rights and wrongs of that and the tactics used, but it was a very like polarised period in British political history when I think everybody knew more or less which side they were on, boys. Not so easy to define these days, sadly. Now, I always liked Frank Field. He was a very sort of gentle, quietly spoken guy who was a big supporter of the printers during the Wapping dispute, as well as the miners in that aforementioned miners' strike a year or so previous. And he was also a big supporter of his own constituents, and at the last election, I think it was, he stood at an independent because the Labour Party threw him out of the Labour Party, and the reason they threw him out of the Labour Party was because he refused to back Keir Starmer's plan for a second referendum on Brexit. Now, the reason he gave was that even though he personally had voted Remain, 87% of his constituents had voted to leave, and he felt it only right, and he felt honour bound, which is unusual these days in politics, to have any honour whatsoever, to support their will. And so Labour Party threw him out. Now, he was also a controversial figure because he wrote a joint report with the former Conservative leader Ian Duncan Smith about the future of the benefits system. And lots of Labour people, lots of people on the left, lots of the old Liberati, they raged against him over him even putting his name to this report. But I'll talk a little bit about that in the next segment, because I've just reached the pub now and I'm dying for a pint. So I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers. Okay, you join me on the morning after the night before. Last night having drunk Strong Ale, past me limit. And now today I've just had a nice coffee and a little French pastry in my little Ponzi cafe where I go to write me poetry. And I just wrote a song about Elvis Presley for some bizarre reason. So in the last segment I was talking about Frank Field, who died yesterday, sadly, at the age of 81. And he was sort of famous or infamous in Labour circles because of the fact that he was part of a report and a research project that attempted thinking the unthinkable in terms of the welfare state. And the conclusion that he came to really upset many in the Labour Party, so much so that he was really sort of ostracised because of his views on the welfare state and the report that came out of it. Because what he was actually saying in sort of layman's terms was that there are generation upon generation, sadly, in this country that are using the benefit system and the dole as a sort of lifestyle choice, and that Labour in particular have never wanted to tackle that through sort of like middle class guilt and liberal guilt. And his view was that he believed like passionately in the welfare state, as I do, but he believed passionately that it was designed to be a safety net for people in work and the less well off and people that are vulnerable, that the state should not allow them to fall through the cracks because of circumstance. And it was a great thing, the welfare state, in the same way as the NHS was a great thing, all part of that, you know, that great post-war Labour government that drove all this stuff through even though the country was bankrupt. Now, you know, I openly admit, in the 80s, when, you know, I was got the sack many times, I was on the dole and I milked it for all it was worth. But then I had a view, you know, like a political view, that the government had a very big hand in me losing my job in terms of their trade union policies or anti-trade union policies and the way they was determined to crush like the mining industry and the printing industry, because they really didn't like them because they always saw them as a challenge to their authority. So, you know, I milked it for all it was worth. But ultimately, I still went back and got another job. And Frank Field, I think, was of the same view, that the whole intention of it was to look after people when they lose their jobs and they don't immediately fall into poverty, and to give them a helping hand, to see them through tough times until they got another job. But he also believed there was, like, you know, there should be like a carrot and stick approach, and he believed that, you know, you should be able to keep some of your benefits He raged against companies that paid minimum wage or less than minimum wage. So he was a passionate believer in good terms, conditions and pay for people who went to work. But he also realised that sometimes if you've been out of work for a long time, you need to be eased back into it and you need to get some financial help just to see you through to the time when you're, you know, truly back on your feet again. But as I say, he was really condemned for putting his name to the report. I think partly because it was in partnership with Ian Duncan Smith. So, and I think, you know, the saddest part of it was the fact that because he was sort of condemned so much and really become like persona non grata, you know, in the Labour Party, that no one's ever had the courage to tackle the elephant in the room again. Like lots of stuff that's going on in society today, unfortunately, you know, we've got these sort of like spineless politicians. There are no like principal politicians anymore. They all just seem to be like career politicians, feathering their own nests. So yeah, he is a loss, and he's sort of up there with some of the greats, even though he was a very like quiet kind of guy, you know. But ultimately, you know, he believed in democracy. And what done it for him in the end, as I say, was the fact that in his constituency, 87% of the people had voted for Brexit, even though he was a Remainer himself, and he believed that it was his duty to uphold that vote and to see it through. And that's why he voted against the Labour plan formulated by Keir Starmer to have a second referendum, and he was totally opposed to that. And in the end, they pretty much threw him out of the Labour Party, and he stood at the last election as an independent and lost, and just retired, you know. Sort of sad way to end your political life, I think, you know. But I still think he was right. So, I'm back home now. The little Travis Bickle, he's sort of looking at me, and I think he wants feeding again. He's got another thing coming if he thinks he's going to get fed again. But I'm just about to get ready to go off to work. So I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers.
Well, I ain't got a dollar, but I don't need a dime. I got a little spot in the country where I spend all of my time. When the sun goes down on this itty bitty town, we can light up the bowl and pass it around. I ain't got a dollar, but I don't need a dime. Sun shining down, long as my old truck still fires on up and there's crops growing in the ground. I'll have to pick some muscadines right off the vines, get a little yeast and make a little wine, cause I ain't got a dollar, but I don't need a dime.
Okay, I think that's it for another episode of the Lights of Us podcast for this week. Short, but not very sweet, I have to say. Have a good week, everybody. I'll speak to you all next week. But in the meantime, think of us, think of the likes of us. I think of all those lab outs, sitting around watching telly in the afternoons while you're out earning a crust. Speak to you later. Cheers.
The Lord above gave man an arm of iron so he could do his job and never shirk. The Lord above gave man an arm of iron, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, someone else will do the blinking work. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, you'll never work. The Lord above made man to help his neighbor, no matter where, on land or sea and foam. The Lord above made man to help his neighbor, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, when he comes around you won't be home. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck you won't be home. Oh, you can walk the straight and narrow, but with a little bit of luck you'll run amok. The gentle sex was made for man to marry, to tend his needs and see his food is cooked. The gentle sex was made for man to marry, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, you can have it all and not get hooked. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, you won't get hooked. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of blooming luck. Walk the straight and narrow, but with a little bit of luck you'll run amok. A man was made to help support his children, which is the right and proper thing to do. A man was made to help support his children, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, now go out and start supporting you. With a little bit, with a little bit, with a little bit of luck, they'll work for you.